We turn now to two texts by St. Aelred of Rivaulx, which are classics in the Christian spirituality of friendship. There are other contemporaries of St. Aelred who write on this subject as well, and if one's going to study the history of friendship in this period, and if you're interested in it, I strongly recommend Brian Patrick McGuire's text, Friendship and Community, The Monastic Experience from 350 to 1250, as well as Liz Carmichael's Friendship, Interpreting Christian Love, and especially a Carolyn White's Christian Friendship in the 4th Century, all of which books are listed in the syllabus for this course and will provide you with much greater detail on this subject than we can possibly uncover in the course of either this lecture or even this section of our course. These are, by the way, a later, more detailed and more accurate descriptions of this subject than one tends to find in texts from the 1980s. John Boswell, unfortunately, was very misled by his researches into this period, and in his text on social tolerance and homosexuality makes some rather grave errors in presuming that there was somehow in earlier Christianity and in the early Middle Ages a tolerance for unchastity in the area of interpersonal relationship, which is absolutely false. It is a complete misunderstanding, and these later texts are very careful while trying not to condemn Boswell for his attempts to point out that he really is inaccurate in his conclusions. And I'd recommend these later texts to you if you've had exposure to any of the other material from the 80s. The background for these texts is an absolute, firm, and complete commitment to Christian chastity. For the unmarried, whether they be in religious communities or thinking about marriage, the norm is celibate chastity. That is to say, there is no encouragement of, no skepticism about, no winking at unchaste sexual relationships. Marriage is the only context in which this is regarded as appropriate. And it's important to hold that in mind and recognize that it is especially the case for St. Aelred, who returns to this theme, and especially as abbot of his monastery of Rivaulx, constantly emphasizes the need for celibacy to be taken absolutely seriously and not using, for example, a notion of friendship as an excuse for some form of unchastity. This is a complete misunderstanding of this tradition, which has to be appreciated against that background, because precisely these authors, Aelred of Rivaulx, his relative contemporary Peter of Chella, and of course St. Bernard of Clairvaux, all use the very flowery and powerful language of courtly love, which at this time is being used in the secular context. It's the basis of the great myths and the stories and the songs of the knight who loves from afar the unapproachable noble woman or queen, and that love, by its very nature, which cannot be consummated, becomes thematic for that individual's life. That image or notion of courtly love is very common in society and is being appropriated by these writers to express in a language drawing from Origen, as we've seen, and Ambrose and many others, especially the language of the Song of Songs, where the embrace, the kiss, the resting of the head on the breast of the beloved is an image that is used to describe the experience of being in the presence of one to whom you can open your heart and who opens their heart to you. So this metaphorical language of love and loving is used, and one can only appreciate it against the background of an absolute and uncompromising commitment to chaste loving. Otherwise, one will be tempted to misunderstand it, unfortunately, as John Boswell did. So let's look at this text from The Mirror of Charity. It's the earlier text by Aelred, in which he's describing a whole approach to Christian love and loving, and particularly looking at the context of life in community. He himself, as we'll see, was a courtier in the court of St. David of Scotland, or King David of Scotland, rather, and who then, on a journey to Rivaulx, fell in love with monastic life, became a monk of that monastery in Northumbria, in the north of England, north of York, and who then eventually became its abbot, and wrote these texts about how one loves in community, and in particular, how one can respect and be grateful for that particular individual kind of love that happens when you find someone where, for no reason other than God's grace, one discovers a capacity to be open in the notion of friendship because of the traditional vision of virtue in the other, which is reciprocated, as we've seen in other classical texts. And Elred admits, describes the fact that he has Cicero's text almost open before him. The De Amicitia is something he read in childhood or in youth, and which he's carried with him and used as a model for all of his subsequent reflections. So the themes that we saw in Cicero's text, then reiterated in Ambrose, are going to be reiterated here, but in a much more poetic and much more flowery way. So let's look at number 39, those in whom we may rejoice in this life. I've used rejoicing in as a way of translating the Latin word fruor, which he is contrasting here with the verb utor. That is to say, he is contrasting a relationship of rejoicing, of being joyful in, of delighting in, as contrasted with a utilitarian relationship. And again, remember the background of Aristotle and of Cicero, that utilitarian relationships, even of friendships, exist, but that they are always regarded as being an inferior kind. And Aylward is trying to celebrate a contrast between this this frui relationship as contrasted with the utor, utilitarian, or uti relationship. And so those verbs will constantly come up in a kind of play, almost a sort of a poetic dance in his writings. Those in whom we may rejoice, in whom there is this fruor, rejoicing relationship, and in particular, it's focused in on the experience where this happens in committed friendship. There is a rejoicing in temporal matters of which Paul speaks in his letter to Philemon. Paul himself is providing an example of an individual, of a unique kind of loving of this individual, which is appropriate even in this temporal life, because as we know, all of our experiences of rejoicing in another are going to be measured against even a kind of an experience of a participation in that ultimate foretaste, that hint of the kingdom which happens in these relationships. One remembers a kind of an almost background hint of Plato's notion of the primordial friendship of which all others are a kind of a symbol. And Elred will return to this when he talks about the example of Christ and St. John, which we've already seen in John Cassian. He says, our true enjoyment, one might say our highest experience of this fruor kind of love, is bound, he says, to be restricted to a small number. And rather than just look at the classical description of inferior kinds of friendships, he, in a sense, creates some new ones. He says, some people test us, others instruct us, others console, and still others sustain us. And then he describes who these are. Our enemies test us, our teachers instruct us, elders console, and for life's needs we turn to those who sustain us. But only those we cherish with gentle affection, whatever category they belong to us, offer us sweetness of life and spiritual delight. And in these we can indeed rejoice, frui, with joy and delight even in this present life. So he's providing a background against which this unique and God-given gift of spiritual friendship can be appreciated. He says in number 109, and this is a very beautiful passage in which he describes again in very flowery, almost romantic sounding language, what it is to have a friend with whom you can be open. It is no ordinary consolation to have someone in this life with whom you can be united by deep affection, the embrace of holy love, in whom your spirit may rest, and then the highlighted text, to whom you may pour out your soul. Remember Ambrose's text of open your heart, open your spirit, open your deeper innermost self to your friend and allow them to do that with you. Remember Gregory's notion of the friend as the custos anime, as the guardian of your soul. Here, Elred is presuming all of that, to whom you may pour out your soul, to whose gracious conversation you may flee for refuge in sadness. As to consoling songs, and then he speaks of the generous bosom of friendship that you may safely approach amid the scandals of this world, and then the image of Christ providing his breast upon which rests the head of the beloved disciple that lies in the background here, to whose most loving breast you may unhesitatingly confide all your innermost thoughts as to yourself, by whose spiritual kisses, as by medicinal ointment, that is, the compassion, the consoling words, or just the knowledge that the other hears, is like this medicinal ointment that purges us from the weariness of agitating cares. Someone who will weep with you in anxiety, rejoice with you in prosperity, seek with you in doubts, someone you can allow into the, even the secret chamber of your mind by the bonds of love, so that even when absent in body, this individual is present in spirit. And again, remember the echoes of the earlier texts on friendship that we've seen. And he talks about the, there alone you may converse with him alone, all the more sweetly, because the more secretly. Here, effectively, Aelred is speaking about a kind of solitude which is provided in unique relationship, in a very cenobitic community. And Cistercian communities were very cenobitic. The monks slept in dormitories, even though in some of the Cluniac monasteries there had been a movement towards what now exists more commonly in the whole monastic world, but has traditionally, at least for the last thousand years, been part of the Benedictine approach, and that is to have the permission for the monks to live in individual cells rather than dormitories. Cistercian life, and you find this described in Thomas Merton's writings, was very cenobitic. You were always in the presence of community. Community was always there, always there in choir, always there even in the dormitory where you slept. And yet, Aelred is suggesting that there is a kind of solitude that is provided by the experience of knowing that there is another in that great community. There may be another with whom you can share at this deep level. It provides something of the benefit of solitude even for those who live in community. And this is a fascinating idea, that the gift of solitude, that which is provided by being alone that we find celebrated in things like the life of Antony, is experienced in the context of Christian friendship. And he goes on in this paragraph to use that very beautiful and flowery language to describe this, this kind of aloneness, this uniqueness with this individual. Now, of course, in Christian tradition, these kinds of unique friendships can also become sources of division. They can become sources of jealousy. They have to be handled with great delicacy. Unfortunately, in the later tradition, the term particular friendship came to refer to those friendships that can be particularly divisive because they are unique, in which two individuals effectively set themselves up against the community, become backbiting or sources of murmuring or even of unchaste relationships. And so the term particular friendship in our own day has acquired a very kind of negative connotation because of the misuse of the gift that solitude, this kind of unique solitude that friendship provides, can offer. So it's a reminder of the fact that this great gift, if it's not used appropriately or delicately or with an openness to the broader needs of the community, can also be problematic. And that's something that Aelred himself was very much aware of and which he talks about in the text, although we won't be able to look at those portions of the text, unfortunately. In 110, he, like Cassian, reminds us of the example of St. John. To one person, not to all, did he, the Lord, grant a resting place on his most sacred breast as a sign of his special love. And then he concludes, this would be the disciple whom Jesus loved. So Jesus' example allows us to have unique individuals with whom there is a degree of openness that is not possible, that we do not find with others. Friendship is blessed by God, exemplified by Christ and St. John. It's a kind of a small S sacramental. Christ has given us this example in St. John of the fact that this can be a gift in life if treasured and used appropriately. Then Aelred goes on in chapter 40, in numbers 111 and 112, to provide again a kind of a beautiful example of the need in 111 for this friendship to be absolutely chaste, that it be an experience of rejoicing in the Lord, not in the world, not in the pleasures of the flesh, but in joyfulness of spirit. And then in 112, there's kind of a delightful example that sometimes our mutual exchange of words is delightful. Our talk should be therefore about habits, about the scriptures. We grieve about the miseries of the world. Let us alternately refresh one another, confiding mutual secrets, and then long for the blessed vision of Jesus and for heavenly benefits. So real friendship will be a context where we can share both our concerns, our anxieties, and our hope of heaven. Remember the Gregory the Great's great image of Benedict and Scholastica, Benedict and the deacon Servandus. He is there sharing the joys of heaven. Sacra conloquia is what friends do. And they also, he says occasionally, Alred says in the second paragraph of this 112, loosen our tense spirits with somewhat less lofty but pleasant subjects. Sometimes we speak about ordinary kind of silly things. Such moments of relaxation ought to be full of integrity and free of flippancy, not sources of disedification, never occasions on which we progress into murmuring. So we now turn, if you drop down, to his later text on spiritual friendship, in which he reiterates much of what we've seen in the Mirror of Charity, but which is really quite beautiful if you contrast the beginning and the end, in which he says, once I believed this about friendship, and now I have discovered this. He says, when I was still a boy at school, and he talks about his experience of falling into vice and not really understanding what friendship was above. When I was a boy, nothing seemed to be more important than amari et amare, to be loved and to love. These seemed to me the most important things. And he says, I was often deceived by the semblance of friendship. And then finally, he read Cicero's De Amicitia, discovered a friendship formula, if you will, and then much, much later in the text, toward the very end, he then describes what it is like to have friendship in community, what it is like to enjoy properly, effectively, both in a chaste way and in a way that doesn't separate from community, but in a sense enhances one's ability to interact with community. He says, in this beautiful kind of poetic cadence, there was no pretense between us, no simulation or dishonorable flattery, no unbecoming harshness, no evasion, no concealment, everything open and above board. For I deemed my heart in a fashion his and his mine, and he felt a manner in a like manner towards me. And so we were progressing in friendship without deviation. And here again, note the echoes of what we've already seen, especially in Ambrose and in Cassian. Neither's correction evoked the indignation of the other, neither's yielding produced blame. In friendship, there can be a growth in virtue because it is precisely the vision of virtue in the other that is the source of one's ongoing deepening of concern. And one can correct a friend in a way that, as he puts it, does not evoke indignation. What more can I say? Was this not a foretaste of blessedness? And now note how he augments his earlier notion. Not only to love and to be loved, seek amare et seek amari, not only to love and to be loved, but also, thus he says, to help, uvare, and to be helped, uvari. So friendship, as it matures, as it grows, as one discovers what it's really about over years, and this is a friendship that is matured, and he says it will take years for this to grow. It does not happen in a few weeks or months. It takes a long time to allow this to deepen, to become what God intends it to be, and it involves not only the earlier romantic model of loving and being loved, but of helping and being helped. Again, this model of a possibility of correction, of allowing the other to become a means of one's own growth in discernment, discernment about what it is God wills for one's life. I discover in the other one who can provide for me insight and wisdom that I might myself not necessarily see. And he describes this as a ladder of charity, as a scala caritatis. Now he says, at one moment to mount to the embrace of Christ, and then to descend to the love of neighbor, there pleasantly to rest. And we can conclude with this, and his exhortation to imitate this, if one wishes, with a note that what Aylward has provided here is a beautiful antidote to the Christian unhappiness at descent from a contemplative, what we might call high. One is experiencing the joy and the delight of being with God in an experience of the vision of heaven, and suddenly one is drawn back down to earth. Gregory the Great frequently talks about how difficult and unpleasant it can be to be dragged back down to administrative responsibilities from the joy of contemplation. Well, for Aylred, there is a way of moving back and forth in a beautifully kind of nuanced and gently interdigitating way, now to mount to the embrace of Christ, then to descend to the love of neighbor. If God has given us this gift of friendship in community, then the contemplation of God gives way to the joyful, and as he puts it, delighting in, fruor experience of the contemplation of God in community and in the particular icon or experience of friendship. So the blessing of friendship can be an opportunity to discover a rhythm of contemplation, alternately experiencing God, as it were, beyond word, beyond image, and then entering back into the tumult, the hustle, the bustle of community life, but delighting in it because it is given a particular kind of joy and opportunity to be delighted in, precisely because God has bestowed this unique gift of friendship.